What's up, everybody? It's Austin Rivers from Off Guard, and I've got some exciting news. Off Guard, hosted by me and my guy Pasha Hagigi, is officially moving to our own podcast feed. We are now dropping two shows every week. Me and Pasha go way back and talk so much hoops already that we figured it was time to fire up the mics and let you in on these conversations. Every week, Pasha and myself will hit on the biggest stories happening around the league. Tap into the show twice a week on our new Off Guard feed on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I remain an editor at TheRinger.com. Joining me in the studio, a new year, same old him. It's Andy Greenwald!
Happy New Year, everyone. I want to just jump in front of this, and I know there's going to be a lot of speculation from people listening, and people are going to talk, and they're going to wonder, and they're going to surmise and accuse me of being one of the millions of Americans suffering from a respiratory infection. From over the holidays. Yeah. And I want to be on the mic now, sounding good. And I want to be in front of all of you listeners, Chris, Kaya, and speak my truth.
Yeah.
Which is, I am not sick. The truth is, I love smoking. And you've covered for me for a long time.
Yeah, I'm always like, oh, I love it.
And you've read the words that I've written.
Yeah.
My journals.
But it turns out that you are Joe Camel.
I am the lung dart king.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, I'm tired of living in shame.
I appreciate you coming through today, Andy. We didn't do a show earlier in the week because it was New Year's Day. You know, we wanted to give space.
And I sounded even better then.
To ring in the new year for Kaya to slowly make her way down the California coast back to us. Just kidding. We didn't want to do a show on New Year's Day, but we're here back on Thursday and we've got a lot to talk about.
We didn't do a show on New Year's Day because, yes, I was sick, but you were in the Mummers Parade, as you are every year, in the fancy division.
That's right. Andy, it's great to see you, man. Today, we're going to talk about our most anticipated shows of 2024, what to watch in 2024. I wanted to ask you something. Well, first of all, how you doing other than having... a kind of 19th century chest infection. How are you doing otherwise?
I'm good. It's fun. First of all, it's always fun to have a cough. It's really fun to have a cough in 23, 24, post-COVID times. People love it. I would say that, like, you know, in the movies, in the Victorian movies, when the person coughs into a handkerchief and then discreetly looks and there's blood?
Yeah, Doc Holliday. We call that.
You call it a Doc Holliday?
Yeah.
I feel like that would at least spice up this experience. For me,
I'd rather you didn't. I mean, there is Zoom. Well,
no, but I think there's no. First of all, I'm not going to cough on you. The aerosols are contained.
Uh-huh.
Second, I do think that modern medicine can probably arrest whatever was happening in the lungs of everyone in a Jane Austen inspired novel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like we're past that now.
It's great to see you. So we're going to talk. Do you want to catch up on some stuff from the break?
I do.
You know, like, because this has been a funny one because we've got these two big shows on that we've been kind of intermittently covering, The Curse and Fargo. And then those have been, you know, they've been doing them on the Prestige TV podcast. And I have been enjoying them to varying degrees. But usually Christmas is a time of catching up on films for me and catching up on the year in movies.
Did some of that.
That'll be my watch of the break rather than the watch of the weekend, which is, you know, we've done that all of three times now. But I'm going to keep it consistent. And I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, as Kaya is my witness, thought Saltburn was pretty good.
This is the most amazing zag.
It's not a zag. I think that I completely understand why people were either A, scandalized by it, or B, thought it was an act of class warfare.
Right.
But I just found it relatively entertaining and not boring. And that was...
That's your benchmark.
That kind of was enough for me. Of all the stuff that I watched over the holidays, kind of catching up, which is what wasn't admittedly like all bangers, you know, like
you watched the Eagles Cardinals game.
Honestly, dude, like one night, it was like my wife and I were trying to find something. I was like, should we start Anatomy of a Fall?
Yeah.
And it was like, no, we're going to watch Hunger Games, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
God damn.
And that was
you?
Not a good film.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was not a good movie.
Are you an HG stan from way back?
You know what? I thought those movies had some moments. You know,
you saw
Hoffman
those?
Was good. I saw all of those in the theaters. I think because like,
damn.
That was just like I was probably going to the movies like 50 times a year back then.
I saw none of them. I will say in my defense that on a Christmas week hike with my children, my older daughter told me the entire imagined history of the Hunger Games universe.
Uh-huh.
Like I can tell you the difference
the
between
the
District 12
yeah,
and 13.
Right. Yeah. Pan Am.
The number of people that she told me were later beaten to death
yeah.
for their involvement.
It's pretty harsh.
It makes me feel like a bad parent, honestly.
Do you feel like you've got it or now do you want to go back and revisit?
Oh, no, I've got it.
You've got it.
I've got it. I've okay. got it.
All right. Well, that was, so Saltburn was kind of like the most fun. I also, if I can I just say, I saw a play while I was in New York City.
Nice.
Saw Danny in the Deep Blue Sea, which mm-hmm. is John Patrick Shanley's 1983 play about just a couple of people at loose ends at a bar in New York City.
It's the best
kind
of play.
They find each other. And it was starring Christopher Abbott as the titular Danny.
I love Christopher Abbott.
And Aubrey Plaza as Roberta. And it was quite excellent.
How'd she do on stage?
She was awesome. That's it was actually really good. It was like 80 minutes, two-hander, just a lot of screaming, a lot of like crying out into the wilderness,
like
looking
Frank,
to be loved.
Frankie and Johnny?
Yeah, kind of. But I love theater.
You love theater. You love hurly-burly, right? Like you just love
early
80s.
I can get into an 80s two guys yelling at each other for a long time play.
I yeah. think the reason you have more of a tolerance to that than I do is that you never took acting classes in college.
Where those were like...
Those are the golden tickets in the Wonka
that
factory.
That was the pitching machine, yeah.
So everyone got a turn.
Yeah.
You're killing me.
Yeah. A lot of, like, is that, like, This Is Our Youth is kind of like that, right?
Sure.
Yeah, yeah that's a little later.
That's,
yeah.
that's Kenny.
Yeah.
We got to respect
you
Kenny.
You little True West. Sweep some shit off a table.
Buddy, I did True West with our mutual friend, Matt.
You did one of the world's only one-man True Wests.
Well, I'll tell you two things. First of all, the true West is the high school sophomore version of True
oh,
West,
God.
Who really understands it. I will give you two guesses as to which part I played.
The shy, retiring, bookish part?
This was years before the switching roles
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
night
yeah.
to night. It didn't occur to me that we could confound expectations.
I would honestly give all yeah. the money in the world to see you play the other part.
I don't think I could play
the
it
names
the way it's Lee and Austin,
Lee
I believe.
And Austin.
I don't think I would give... I got to give a shout out to our friend Matt because Matt played Lee.
No shit.
And and did so. He showed up for our performance with a suitcase of O'Doul's non-alc,
uh-huh.
which he then proceeded to drink most of. And then later told me that it's like, there's no such thing as non-alc.
Yeah, it's like 0.1, right?
I mean, you got to work for it.
Yeah.
But you'll get there.
Yeah.
Get there.
Anything for you? Did you aside from a
so I'm just lost
the,
in my
the oral tradition of the Hunger Games
floorboards
and your a reverie about being in Sam Shepard plays? Did you have anything that you came out? Because I love getting a text from you
yeah.
2 days or a day before we're going to record and being like, what should I have been watching for the last 2 weeks?
Which is just first of all, I've sent you other texts.
Yeah.
It's just we should we have two chats, one for the non-stop flow of information and then one for like professional obligations?
Sure. Yeah.
Would that be helpful?
Let's start multiple text threads.
Okay, good. I am going to also stake an opinion on a hot button film of the holiday season.
Is it going to be your watch of the holidays or is it going to be a piece of criticism?
Oh, no. I just want to say the holdovers rules.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to come with some more maestro takes.
Oh, I hold my LaCroix. I'm ready for that. First, though, I want to say, like, The Holdovers is fantastic. I reject all politicization of the quality of this film.
Oh,
like I'm not. I'm just not. I'm just not showing up for any narrative that may emerge about how, like, this is old-fashioned or it's slow or it appeals to... Like, I thought it was a beautiful movie.
Good movie.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was, like, right outside my top five.
I think it would be in my top five, although I'm still... You know, I haven't seen Songbirds and Snakes yet, yeah. So you never know.
I really would love to see, like, if you watch Saltburn,
yeah,
will you just FaceTime me and leave the phone there so I can watch your face?
I don't think I'm going to like it.
Yeah, but I don't think you're not going to like it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What did you think I was going to think about Maestro?
I thought you were going to hate Maestro with every bone of your body.
Yeah. You held that back. You were very... I appreciated that.
I actually thought about that watching it. I was like, I bet Andy hates this fucking movie.
I really disliked it.
Yeah.
I really disliked it. But I think hate is strong because it's very hard to...
You can't hate the accomplishment, right?
Exactly. Right. No, and
the craft.
And even... Put Bradley aside for a second. He certainly didn't. But let's put him aside for a second.
That's my guy. I don't want to hear one bad word about him.
Listen, the production design is amazing. Carrie's amazing. And anytime you approach a story and you're like, I'm going to try something different. I'm going to zag. I'm going to make an art film out of what otherwise could be a pretty straight down the middle biopic. I have to admire that. You have my attention.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of problems, though, with the fact that this is a movie about actually one of the most interesting people of the 20th century. And it's about how maybe he liked to step out a couple times. Like, it's just a bizarre misread of someone who I think has a lot of relevance and
is a
compelling person.
I think I was aware of Leonard Bernstein as composer and as a conductor. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy watching the YouTubes of his concerts. Yeah. I did not know much about his biography or about his political action committee that he seemed to have running out of his apartment, which I thought was fascinating.
But that wasn't in the movie?
It wasn't in the movie.
Yeah,
But as Sam says, we shouldn't judge it on what was left out. We should judge it on what is left in.
My feeling is, you remember at the end of Back to the Future, when Doc Brown is like, it's your kids, Marty?
Yeah.
I feel like it's the actors. We got to do something about the actors.
You feel like they're doing too much?
I feel like they're going to help themselves to extra at the Sizzler bar. You know what I mean? Like... Bradley's like, I'm going to give myself...
Oh, you feel like they got skinny off that strike? and now they're seconds?
I just mean it's like, Bradley's like, I'm gonna eat and eat and eat. But don't worry, my pitch to you, Carrie, is I'm going to tell everyone the movie's about you. It's not. But I'm going to let you die real slow. Camera's going to catch all of it.
Uh-huh.
All of it. And we're going to get you that Oscar. I don't know. I found it surprising for the reasons that I dislike the ways that I disliked it. But you want to talk about the Tears for Fears scene?
I mean, I don't want to spoil anything for people who haven't gotten there. I think that is, I enjoyed it. Okay. I actually wouldn't have kind of been into like 80s Lenny as like a, what the movie was about.
There were a lot of interesting movies back there. And look, I'm being glib. I shouldn't be glib because this was a couple weeks ago that I watched it. And it's one of those things where, and I feel like you, how many times a year did you go to the movies? 50 times?
Back in the day, yeah.
Well, yeah, but if you count rewatchables prep as going to the movies, you're still keeping those numbers up.
Yeah.
No, I think there's got to be a term for, like, there's the movies that in the days after you see them, your feelings change.
Yeah, sure.
And sometimes they get more positive. Sometimes they get more negative.
That's how I felt about Saltburn, is that, like, actually in the days after seeing it, I was like, you know what? I didn't mind that.
So I think that's an interesting phenomenon to think about. And Maestro, I went more negative than I felt after I legitimately watched it. But I should say, like, broadly speaking, people who make movies or make anything, I think, should find what makes them inspired, what makes them compelled to make it, as opposed to being like, this is going to be for everybody. So I do respect that. And I obviously respect Bradley's close friendship with Jeffrey Lurie and the entire Eagles organization. So I won't say anything bad about that. But then otherwise, I just watched a lot of old movies.
Yeah.
I went, especially during my more febrile days, I was watching a lot of Jim Brooks, James L. Brooks movies.
Uh-huh.
When's the last time you watched Broadcast News?
I watched it a couple years ago for the rewatchables.
Did you rewatchables that?
Yeah.
God damn it.
With Chuck.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. It was, I mean, he's the best, man. I wish, he's got a new one coming out.
He's talking about it.
Yeah, he's cast it. Emma Mackey's in it. Something funny is happening.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the year and the beginning of the year, we always are in basically award season. It's big picture season.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Globes are on Sunday. All the actors on actors videos, the actors roundtables, directors on directors, it's all happening.
Yep.
They're all talking about their stuff. They just all look all so fresh-faced. And you referenced two times The Holdovers and Maestro and some of the discourse surrounding those movies.
And I apologize for
that. No, that's not. This is my point. Do you feel like there's like an absence of that kind of influence or discussion around TV right now? Because I think that for all the merits of, say, The Curse or Fargo, it was funny seeing all the True Detective reviews, and we're going to be having a lot of True Detective content on the watch coming up. It was like the first time that I felt like we had had like a flat out like critical sensation in a while in TV, and that there was like this sort of air of discourse and anticipation around something in a way where it wasn't like basically people throwing their hands up and being like, there's just too much to watch, so I'm going to watch what I watch on my own time. Mm-hmm. And it's just been interesting to kind of be watching the movie kind of conversation wrap around Iron Claw and Maestro and Holdovers and Saltburn and, you know, Zone of Interest as it's coming and Poor Things as it's coming to more theaters, and it having it be like this real tug of war that I feel like I'm seeing play out in social media and even in discussions at like dinner. And TV is now kind of sort of more of that like, oh, did you happen to fit this in between a rerun of Suits and like a Netflix docuseries that you were watching, and then you checked out two episodes of this and wasn't for you? Like, it does feel like a quiet time because we're going to be talking about what's coming out in 24, and there's a lot of like big ticket items, but there's something missing in terms of like the juice around TV.
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. I think one of the factors is that we are lacking that alpha show.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, that show has been on, you know, like one of two networks, but I think it's safe to say that a lot of the shows that we've been talking about, even ones that we've been celebrating, you know, like The Gold or whatever, like the people who have found it like it.
Yeah.
But they are not that big show. I think the other aspect is connected to a conversation we had at the end of last year as well, which is the disparity between who has what and where people watch things, I think, is growing.
Yeah.
I don't think it might be enough internally for FX/Hulu/Disney to be getting the ratings that Fargo season 5 is getting for them, because I haven't been keeping a close eye on it, but it seems like they are getting linear viewers still. It's an established brand with some stars in it. It's a dependably quality production. You know, their streaming data is what it is, but I'm sure it's justifying. I'm sure they're happy with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm trying to couch it. But that doesn't mean, quote unquote, the masses are watching it. If it was on Netflix, maybe they would be.
Yeah.
It's weird saying that. It's weird just sort of casually saying that, because this whole podcast, to a degree, is built, not let alone like my professional career for the last 10 plus years, is based on this idea that people will find quality and people will seek things out wherever. But as we have cut cords and decentralized everything, we have reached this point now where I'm not really sure what choir everyone's preaching to.
I just was reading Steven Soderbergh's annual Red Scene Watched, or, you know, like his sort of media diary that he keeps, which is always this object of incredible fascination for me, because he's such like a voracious but also eclectic consumer of stuff.
High culture and low culture.
And the low culture stuff is almost exclusively Netflix. Mm-hmm. Like it is interesting to watch. If you were to do like just a map of his last few years, and this is a guy who watches as much Below Deck as he rewatches Hitchcock and Bergman movies, right?
It's like me and Kaya.
Yes, it was. If you and Kaya were the same person, there's almost like this arc of like all of TV that was used to be like cable, basically, is now just on Netflix. And he's also watching like what used to be 30 for 30. You know, it's basically he's watching Drive to Survive and the tennis one. And on Apple, he was watching like the Super League documentary. But a lot of, you know, true crime and a lot of sort of contemporary news, current events, docuseries. And it's like so much of his Netflix. And then I don't know if you noticed, but like a bunch of Warner stuff wound up on Netflix in the last couple of weeks. So like eight or something of their movies are all Warner's movies, and a bunch of shows now. Like it's crazy how that has become like basically America's television now.
Yeah. I mean, Netflix set out when they ditched the red envelopes, I think the idea was to eat HBO's lunch. And there was that famous thing about like, we're going to become them before they can become us. That's not how things shook out. Netflix didn't become HBO. Netflix became TV.
Yeah.
Netflix became the thing you turn on while you think about what other things you might add to it. You search there first.
Yeah.
It's where most things, and increasingly as companies are licensing their content again, you can now once again play the long game with them that think that something might eventually end up there.
Yeah.
It is surprising. I also wonder, just to circle all the way back to your original point about like movies and discourse things, the larger disconnect between who's actually talking about what or watching what. I mean, the awards discourse around movies is always so, and I know this is a hobby horse of yours as well. It's like, who's talking about Poor Things since it's only playing in five cities,
yeah,
right?
Right.
I'm not really sure how national that argument is.
I think it's a very bubble take, but you know, at the same time, it's like Aquaman 2 pretty much flopped,
yep,
but is also going to like 300x the sort of box office of Poor Things, right? Like,
sure,
it is. We're not talking about Aquaman 2, but like more people will have experienced that than probably Poor Things.
This is also potentially self-serving for a podcast, but the one thing that I do think is sneaky monoculture or becoming monoculture, at least in terms of its popularity or reach, is Slow Horses. I think Slow Horses is legitimately a
what makes you say
show.
That?
I mean, it's partly my typical Thomas Friedman. I took a taxi cab sure. in a major coastal city once and someone was talking about it. I have actively overheard three strangers explaining
and
the plot
this
of the show
Little
to someone.
Doms yeah, exactly. And All Time.
This is both in Los Feliz and Silver Lake. So I think it's a pretty yeah. safe bet. No, but I mean, I have heard strangers explaining it to people.
Sure.
Was
your daughter involved?
She's not interested in the show as it is. She's interested in the origin stories
sure.
of the...
Yeah, the Songbirds and Snakes of Slow Horses.
Right.
Actually, it would probably be a pretty sick show.
Hold on. The Jonathan Pryce show?
Yeah.
We're Avail.
Yeah.
No, but I think that is a successful show and has room to grow. Probably best to... We can get into our list because I think this... I don't know if you had other stuff... ahead of that. But
no,
I think but this conversation is a worthwhile one.
Yeah.
In terms of what even is the conversation now. I think True Detective coming back will be an interesting one. But I think the larger returns on where we're at culturally in terms of TV's footprint is at least a year away from any kind of forward movement because of the delays from the strikes.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if we were heading into 24 with HBO having Last of Us, House of the Dragon, which they do have, White Lotus, mm-hmm. all coming in the next 5 months, it would probably feel a little different.
So one of the reasons why I was mentioning Netflix is as I was putting together this list of the shows that we're anticipating in 2024, Netflix is sort of, at least to me, kind of opaque about like what's coming when, you know,
yeah.
They...
When you say at least to you, you mean they're not returning your calls?
Well, what I would say is that like, I'm sure if I dedicated more time to it, I could unearth more release dates and sort of calendar year schedules, but I think that they move at a very flexible pace. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like there was a couple of things that popped off that was like, oh, that's on Netflix this year. That'll be interesting. But I can't figure out when it's coming out. And then there is undoubtedly going to be 6 to 10 shows on Netflix that will be like, this is out of nowhere, like Beckham or Dark or whatever, where you'd mm-hmm. never heard of it. All of a sudden, three people said, you got to watch this, and now it's like a sensation. So that this list will be absent of a lot of Netflix shows, but I would almost say watch this space because, you know, 6 times a year at least, something is on Netflix where I'm like, shit, that was my weekend, you know?
Yes, and I think that they're the only ones, I mean, not to blow more smoke, but they do seem to be the only ones operating from a position of strength.
Yeah.
Like that it's okay, they can just sit on stuff and then decide when they want to deploy it.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details. You talked a little bit about the idea of what we would usually know.
Sorry to interrupt you, but like, for example, I just this morning learned that Michelle Yeoh has a TV series
coming out in like a week or two.
Yeah,
Brother's Son.
Yeah, a Netflix show that Brad Falchuk, who used to work with Ryan Murphy mm-hmm. and everything, like it's just
you're gonna have this reaction like 6 times.
Okay,
when we do this, so you were mentioning the HBO. Usually, we have like like 4 or 5 HBO shows that we kind of like have a sense are coming, and that we're like now. I've watched a little bit of the new True Detective.
Mm-hmm.
The embargo has been lifted, so I will say it's awesome. We're going to be talking to Issa Lopez on the pod soon. I can't wait to talk about the series. Jodie Foster is outstanding in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh shit. But after that, and you know, the sympathizer and the regime, there's a bunch of stuff. And of course, industry, we'll talk about all that. The thing that really jumped out at me as I was putting together this list is the extent to which Apple has a bunch of shows, some of which I think are safely coming out in 24, some might, that feel like in a different timeline might have been HBO shows.
Yes.
That they are the kind of prestigious dramas with a big name that I think you would have kind of been like, that feels like it should be on Max on Sunday nights. And now we've had like a kind of mixed relationship with the Apple TV offerings. Like, obviously we love Slow Horses, very excited about Masters of the Air. For All Mankind has like a huge amount of fans among our listeners, and we're just like woefully behind on it. I liked Silo, Kaya liked Silo. Like, we have shows on it that we have enjoyed, but the idea of looking at this lineup and being like, wow, Apple has like eight things that I would definitely at least check out is a little bit surprising. I was a little bit shocked to see how the disparity of the distribution of the networks and how much Apple there was on this.
I mean, I think that it's been interesting to observe. A moment ago, I was saying how Netflix set its guns on HBO a decade ago. Things developed the way they developed, and Netflix became even bigger than that. Apple also came for HBO in a way. And, you know, Apple, I mean, HBO was the only game in town in terms of luring for many years, if not decades, and, you know, with luring big stars into television, usually in the form of a TV movie or a miniseries. And then with Big Little Lies, it sort of blew the lid off of it in terms of what was possible. That was a classic.
And True Detective.
Thank you for saying that. That was the first one that lit this whole fuse. Apple has more money.
Yeah,
it just has more money. And making TV shows,
they can do the old model of it's got to be big, buzzy, or awards, and hopefully some combination.
Yeah, and it's the cost is irrelevant to them. They can spend the most money to secure the material, whether it's the underlying IP or the package that's brought to them by an outside studio, and then they can just lard it with talent.
Yeah,
because they can afford to pay more than one actor that costs $1 million an episode, or set that actor's new floor at $1 million an episode. So I think this is not news. This is not news to our listener, Casey Bloys, who's pivoted in really smart ways and has other shows, you know, and I think we'll ultimately always make the argument.
There's a bunch of Max stuff here. I mean, like, yeah.
No, but I think that's an interesting point to make. I think that there's an argument that, well, TV doesn't make stars. I mean, TV makes stars. Stars don't make TV. But I guess we're about to go through a list that might try to suggest otherwise.
So the only other thing, sort of top line, like, big picture takeaways that I got from doing this list was the extent to which the strikes have impacted these shows. Mm. A lot of these shows suspended production or suspended development or whatever it was, but they were mid-production here's the thing. When you read about this stuff, often the articles attached to the point at which the show is are not quite in sync with reality.
That's true. Right?
So it'll be like, so-and-so has just joined this movie. And it's like, this movie's done shooting. They just announced that this person is in the movie.
I lived that in real time.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there is a bunch of stuff here that I think sounds good, but was like, this was a go before the strike, or they were writing these before the strike, or they were shooting this before the strike. And the post-strike information has essentially dried up on some of these things. So keep that in mind. A lot of this 2024 stuff, it might be 2025. And as we're seeing more and more with quote-unquote scheduling conflicts, some of this stuff might not happen at all. So I'm not going to go in chronological order. I'm going to kind of go in little tiers and categories that I have here, partially because we just don't have release dates for a lot of this stuff. Let's get the returning shows out of the way.
Okay.
Stranger Things is going to come back for its final season on Netflix. Hacks is going to come back in the spring.
That's
on
exciting.
Max. True D, as we said, is coming back in about a week. House of the Dragon returns on Max in the summer. Industry, our boys, coming back soon on Max. And there is some Andor season 2. Could they get it done? I doubt it, but
I think it's more likely 25.
Okay, so I've just had that out there. And then there are some things that you could say, is this a Masters of the Air is coming on Apple in a couple of weeks. is that a returning champion because it's like Band of Brothers in the Pacific, or do you consider it something new? I guess you consider it something new.
I consider it part of the larger war cinematic universe.
It's kind
universe.
Of a Songbirds and Snakes situation.
Well, the birds.
Yeah.
Because they fly.
Yeah. Of these returning hitters, what are you most excited about?
Of that list?
Mm-hmm.
Industry?
Yeah. We can only be us.
I mean, there was one right answer, right? I'm sorry. What about you?
If I took industry out of it, I am fascinated with the extended period of time between these two Stranger Things seasons and to what extent they are comfortable like ending this and to what extent they'll be like the further adventures of all these people besides David Harbour and Millie Bobby Brown because they're like in a bunch of different movies and stuff.
Can I make a promise to you? And when I say promise to you, there's a certain kind of promise to you. There's the like, I'll pick you up promise because we're friends.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's the, like, you saying you'll watch a Miyazaki movie promise, which is, like, mostly for clicks.
I got pretty close with this. I've watched two animated series.
Yeah, you're like a goldfish in a bag. You just need to get, you don't want to see the really good thing. You just want to, like, understand what the water feels like. I would like to watch the beginning, at least the beginning of the Stranger Things season.
That's very big of you.
No, I mean, but specifically, like, I kind of want to be, like, because I haven't watched it since season
two.
Two, right?
You watched one, didn't you?
Yeah, I loved one.
Okay.
I
and
watched
you started two and you were like, nah.
No, I watched two.
Two's not at the mall. Two is Halloween. Three is at the mall. Four is running up the hill. This is five coming.
I just want to see these tall men.
Yeah, that's the thing. Are they going to have to de-age these guys like the Irishman?
I kind of want to just like do it as an experiment, being like, what is this? What is this? Or is this purely like,
they've got like multiple stage productions of like adaptations of the Stranger Things world going. I'm sure there's an animated something in the works if it hasn't already come out and I don't know about it. And like a bunch of these characters probably could have continuing adventures of. And so I'm just going to be curious to see, like, it'll be a pretty significant moment, you know, that this has probably been one of the more popular shows over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And just seeing how they end it. So aside from my obvious desire to watch Jon Snow snort snow in industry.
Nicely done.
I am curious about the end of Stranger Things.
Good.
Okay, thanks.
What about Boys? The Boys?
What about it? Oh, it is coming back.
That's
as
coming
is
back.
Outer Range, as is Rings of Power, I think. So I hope Outer Range comes back. I have not heard much about the second season of that. And that, speaking of things that have taken a long time to get back to screens.
You should check that out because that guy, Lewis Pullman, I think that kid's, he's worth watching.
It's one of your weirdest fucking bits. If somebody didn't listen to like the first episode of the Lessons in Chemistry.
No. Listen, one thing that I've been assured by our crack team here is that everyone listens to the entire podcast.
That's true.
At 1.0 speed. All the way through.
I'm going to talk to you about the Apple Television Corporation.
I'm excited.
Okay, so here are a bunch of shows from Apple this year that piqued my interest. Number one is Sinking Spring.
Yeah.
This was made in a lab for you and I. It stars Brian Tyree Henry and Wagner Moura as two Philadelphia friends who pose as DEA agents to rob a house, but face the consequences of their actions when it turns out they robbed a large narcotics operation. Yeah. And a lot of these descriptions, I want to shout out Rob Perez's playlist website because that's the wellspring of stuff I'm getting a lot of these.
I want to shout out the fact that I think I pitched this idea to you at the library bar in 2004. Not as a TV show.
I don't know what's going on with this because there's also another Philly crime saga coming from Brad Inglesby starring Mark Ruffalo, right?
Yes.
And that's Max?
That's HBO.
HBO.
That's happening.
So we're getting two Philly crime sagas.
Yes.
Sinking Spring is a good example of was in production, was halted by strikes, don't know what's going on with this.
We don't have an update, but it seems like they got about 3 months filmed and then were shut down in May. Unless they waited for seasonal synchronicity, this can be finished to air this year.
Okay.
I'm just going to declare that. It seems possible.
Yes. And this is apparently was at least partially or entirely shot by Eric Messerschmidt, who's David Fincher's go-to cinematographer over his last couple movies. So that's pretty exciting.
My only note about this is it's based on a 2009 book called Dope Thief, which is a much cooler name than Sinking Spring, but I guess I don't work for Apple.
Another one is The Big Cigar. Andre Holland starring as Black Panther leader Huey Newton and Alessandra Nivola plays Bert Schneider, the Hollywood producer, and Schneider is trying to help Newton abscond to Cuba from the States. And this is from Jim Hecht, who worked on Winning Time.
And this is an Epic Magazine type article. I remember the article. Okay. It's very, very cool.
Cool. And Audrey Holland, I'll watch him in anything.
Truly, one of our greats.
Presumed Innocent, an adaptation from David E. Kelly of the famed Scott Turow thriller from the 90s.
Shout out Bonnie Bedelia. She's on your list.
Bonnie was great. She was great. She shook me up in that movie.
Yeah.
No spoilers. Jake Gyllenhaal and Ruth Negga starring in this reboot.
Great
of
cast.
The 90s thriller. Lady in the Lake, which is, I've been reading about this possibly happening for a while, mm-hmm. so take this with a grain of salt. Natalie Portman, and this is in a Laura Lippman, Alma Harrell collaboration about crime in Baltimore in the 1960s.
It's based on Laura Lippman's novel.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And that to me is like, that's a 2015 HBO show.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Lupita was originally okay. co-starring with Natalie.
Okay.
I call them by their first names.
Speaking of something that it's just like, am I reading these words and they're real words and these are people are doing this thing. Disclaimer, mm-hmm. written and directed, I think, entirely by Alfonso Cuarón.
It's just nuts.
Starring Cate Blanchett and Kevin Kline about a famed television journalist who discovers she is a prominent character in a novel that reveals a secret she has tried to keep hidden. It says it got done production last February.
It's really hard to even conceive of any of this, but...
I think this is happening. I think that's happening.
I don't think they're lying to us. It's just when you say those things.
What if, like, our new thing was just, like, accusing networks of lying to us?
I actually think our new thing should be... I'm just going to suggest this. See what Kaya thinks about this, just, you know, legally speaking. But I think that we should, during a slow time or at this time next year, do an entire hour with made-up projects.
Yeah.
And just see.
Oh, we could definitely get away with it.
We could 100% get away with it. Well,
Dope
maybe
Thief.
Exactly. A third series about Philadelphia guys hanging out? Weird.
Thieving from dope.
But also surfing?
Okay, so then there's a couple of things where I'm like, you tell me, Severance season 2?
I believe it's happening.
Okay.
Is that, are you asking me if they're real or not?
I mean, I think that, no, I know Severance season 2 is inevitably
Severance
coming.
Season 2 is going to come this year, I okay. think. It was a, from everything I've heard, it was a, like the first season, a very grueling production because of the production demands and it's very exacting.
And global warming, so you can't get the snow.
I mean, that's true too, but there's an Apple show about the making of Severance in and the struggles they found weather-wise. No, I think Severance will come this year. We haven't heard a lot about it. I think they, from what I they were probably scheduled to be done before the strike, but then weren't, but look forward to seeing what they came up with.
Bad Monkey, which is Bill Lawrence, who is a legendary sitcom producer and then worked a lot on Ted Lasso. It's his adaptation of Carl Hiaasen's novel, and it's supposed to star Vince Vaughn and Michelle Monaghan and Jodie Turner-Smith and Meredith Hagner and Rob Delaney and Natalie Martinez. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's a stacked cast. I have not seen a peep.
And my strike buddy, John Ortiz.
Yeah.
Great
guy. I have not seen a frame of this. Or
yeah, this is curious. It's definitely in the can. But I've not heard it, about it being scheduled.
Okay. Something that is scheduled is Manhunt, which stars Tobias Menzies, and it's about the hunt for the man who shot Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you a Menzies man?
I'm a Menzies man, and I'm also, I don't love a presidential assassination.
Careful.
I love content around it.
Like Libra.
Yeah.
Or Don DeLillo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what you love. Is that
and
what you're talking about?
And the movie JFK.
Okay. So those are the two things.
And then the movie In the Line of Fire.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And the Last Minute of Lincoln. That's a bummer, you know, but like...
Did you see it coming?
I didn't. But I mean, I'm excited to see more about it. You know, what happens the next... The Z Wantaneo.
So do you
so
think...
To speak of...
Is this sort of the like... You know, when I've talked about this in the podcast before, but how Disney used to make sequels to their masterpiece classic movies, but they would only release them like on home video, like Lion King 2. Like, do you feel like this is Lincoln 2?
Well, it's from...
Wouldn't that be savage if they called it Lincoln 2 Manhunt? They would make so much money.
I know.
That'd be so cool. Wait, do you think they were ready for a Menzies moment? I'm not joking around. Like, I feel like this guy...
I think that he has achieved the level of like, I can carry a TV series for sure.
I think this is not on our radar, but I think Outlander, people yeah. really like this guy.
Yeah.
Kaya, do you like Tobias Menzies? Do you have an opinion?
No, sorry.
Okay, so
wrong.
I'm just testing. This is, I'm just testing.
I like this. So there's certain things that you hear about in taxi cabs in New York or in...
I wasn't in New York.
restaurants in Silver Lake.
Yeah.
And then there are things...
I just have a gut feeling.
A gut feeling, like that Menzies is due.
That this 49-year-old Brit... That some people will be like,
you always believed
guy?
In Trey Turner and you always believed in Tobias Menzies.
Tobias Menzies starred in my favorite film of 2023, You Hurt My Feelings, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah.
Look at your face. You're so tired of me.
I'm not tired of you. Tell me that when you've seen Saltburn.
Kaya, all right. Kaya, do you know that this month is our 12th anniversary of doing this pod?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Aw.
Can you see it?
I didn't even get a present. Wanna,
no, it just feels like 12 years for you.
Not you. I
didn't get a present for you guys.
Doing the podcast with you is our present.
Yeah.
I could see the decade plus on Chris's face. Just
I wonder what Kyle would get us. Maybe like a Ohtani and Yamamoto jersey.
She would get us a firm handshake.
Yeah.
Kyle gives us enough.
Okay, so those are the Apple shows. You can see why I'm like, damn, Apple.
Yeah, good stuff.
And then let's go through some other stuff here. In January, we've talked a lot about True Detective and Masters of the Air coming. Later in the month, one thing that I'm keeping my eye on is Capote versus the Swans. This is part of the Feud franchise that Ryan Murphy oversees.
Well, there was one of them in 2017.
And now this one feels closer to like Fosse Verdon than it does American.
Which was not a feud, was it?
No. I think that was just Fosse Verdon.
What about Feud Lincoln Manhunt? That all tracks.
It was a feud.
That's literally what happened.
Yeah, but John Wilkes Booth kind of ended that argument.
You think he won the feud?
I don't know.
Jeez.
Anyway, this is Tom Hollander as Truman Capote, and then the Swans are the group of women that he sort of ingratiates himself to are played by Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Molly Ringwald, Demi Moore, and Calista Flockhart.
Amazing.
John Robin Bates, the esteemed playwright, he wrote it.
Robbie.
Yeah. Is that what we call him?
That's what he's called.
That's on FX at the end of the month. Also coming soon on the Hulu FX side of the street is The Veil, which is Elizabeth Moss in a Stephen Knight, parentheses, Peaky Blinders, parentheses, Rogue Heroes.
Parentheses, everything.
Yeah. And this is about, it kind of feels a little Patricia Highsmith-y.
Yeah.
And it's about two women traveling from Istanbul to Paris and London. And one possessing a secret that the other must expose, co-stars Josh Charles.
As the other woman?
No, but I think that this looks cool.
It sounds very cool. And anything that showcases Elizabeth Moss, that gets watched in this house.
Speaking of Highsmith, I do think we will eventually see Ripley.
Yes.
Steve Zaillian's long gestating adaptation of Patricia Highsmith's sort of maybe one of her most famous characters, Ripley, obviously. It's Andrew Scott. And this was originally going to be on Showtime, I think.
This
has moved to Netflix.
Yeah, this is elite behind-the-scenes maneuvering. This was a big, big get for Showtime. This is Andrew Scott coming off of Fleabag Season 2. Steven Zaillian, who has a long career and an impressive CV, and made this series, shot it in black and white, which is remarkable. And then when Showtime decided it was just going to become a plus to Paramount, they consciously uncoupled, but it's remarkable to see this uncoupling where they then end up at, as we were saying, the most popular place. So this is going to be on Netflix. Yes, it will come out this year, and yes, we will check it out.
Yes. So that's the Highsmith category. What else do we have here?
You got some good stuff here on this list.
There's some good stuff. Let's stick with Netflix. Mm-hmm. This is something that is happening. Mm-hmm. A show called Zero Day.
Insane.
With Robert De Niro, Lizzie Kaplan, and Jesse Plemons. This is from the Netflix website. Zero Day asks the question on everyone's mind, what's Kaya getting Chris and Andy for their anniversary?
This is going to be a new running bit. I think we should crowdsource suggestions because there's one thing. Anyone who listens to us talk about whatever we want for a decade plus, I feel like we deserve a gift.
I think it would be funny if Kaya got us a Polestar car, like an electric car.
Wow, I feel really... You know, I never actually...
Talked about it.
I never talked about it.
Andy had a bad experience with an electric car. Mm-hmm. Not me.
Vroom, vroom.
Joe just brought those prices down,
you
man.
You are the I drink your milkshake meme, but for Earth's natural ore. That's you.
Yeah, I'm sure no tears were shed making electric power cards, man.
I'm finished.
0 Day asks the question on everyone's mind. How do we find truth in a world in crisis? One seemingly being torn apart by forces outside of our control. And in an era rife with conspiracy theory and subterfuge, how much of those forces are products of our own doing, perhaps even our own imagining? Mm. That does not really tell us what the show is about.
No.
But Robert De Niro and Lizzie Kaplan and Jesse Plemons are apparently in this.
It, more than that, also, here's all we know about the show. Application for filming a train crash was submitted last summer.
Hell yeah.
That's cool. I like train movies. Did you see the full... The full cast? Can I just name some names?
Go ahead.
I believe you mentioned Bob De Niro.
Yeah.
Lizzie Kaplan.
Yeah.
Jesse Plemons.
Yep.
My Queen, Joan Allen. My Queen, Connie Britton. The great Bill Camp. The great Dan Stevens.
Inside of you, there are two queens.
My third queen, Angela Bassett. Matthew Modine. This is wild.
Yeah. I don't know what the show is really about. Like, I know it's about conspiracy theories, but this is like one of those things that you're just reading. Also on Netflix, Black Doves. This one jumped out at me because Gary Haji was like a curio from a couple years ago, the Kelly MacDonald crime thriller that was set in Japan.
I mostly liked it. We never really talked about
it. Was it set in Japan or was it set in London? I can't remember.
It was in both.
Both. Joe Barton does this series, and here's the log line. Spy thriller starring Keira Knightley and Ben Whishaw with Sarah Lancashire.
In.
Yeah, right. So that's on Netflix. That sounds incredible. This is the big one. This is the big one that Netflix has in their back pocket. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot is riding on it in some ways.
Okay.
Three Body Problem.
It's a big one.
The new series from Benioff and Weiss, a mind-bending sci-fi on a huge scale. Starring Benedict Wong and...
Jovan Adepa.
Yeah. And Dave and Dan. It's been quiet for them, you know?
It's been very quiet.
They did
quiet.
The chair, right? Like, they did the Sandra Oh show a little bit, like, kind of, right?
I mean, I think that was a... I don't know if David Benioff, his wife is Amanda Peet.
Yes, I know that.
It's underreported.
Yeah.
I think that was through the family connection, since that was her show.
Yo, I saw this video on Instagram a couple weeks ago of... It was a compilation of times that Sarah Paulson has kind of has been unimpressed by how hot Channing Tatum is.
Sarah Paulson?
Yeah.
So has this come up a lot?
I guess it has. Uh-huh. And, you know, Sarah Paulson is married to Holland Taylor and like all that, you know, like, so I makes sense that she does not like Channing Tatum sweat on me.
Yeah.
But she is like, nah, dog, that doesn't do it for me to like other, and including Amanda Peet, they were having some sort of like Studio 60 reunion and Amanda Peet's like, Channing Tatum is a smoke show. And Sarah Paulson is like, you in fact are married to the hottest man.
This was a filmed event?
It was like an Instagram reel. It was like all the time Sarah Paulson has been unimpressed by Channing Tatum.
This was your real watch of the winter. Just scrolling Instagram reels.
Yeah. And it's just people being like, have you seen Magic Mike? And Sarah Paulson being like, nah.
That sucks.
No, she likes the movie, I think.
No, she thinks the project of Channing Tatum.
Yeah, but she's just like, keep it over there for me. You know?
She didn't see him dance in Hail Caesar?
It's not Channing Tatum. It's Magic Mike.
No, I know, but I'm saying he's charming in Hail Caesar.
She doesn't seem to respond to
his charms. She's immune.
Yes. But this, and then Amanda Peet's like, holy shit, did you see this guy? And she's like, in fact, you have the hottest husband. Can you imagine if you were Benioff?
Yeah.
And you're like, not only did I do Thrones.
Yes.
But then like Sarah Paulson is like, I'm the hottest man in the world.
He's objectively a good looking
man.
He's
a good looking guy. He is a good looking guy.
We interviewed, he's a tall, he looks you in the eye.
Did we interview him?
Yes, we interviewed Dan and Dave.
Did we?
Yes, we went to their office. Where were you? You, me, Dave Jacoby.
We did that?
Yes.
Did you do that?
Yes. Oh, you mean you didn't come?
Did I not? Was I not there?
All I know is I went to their production offices. And we did a podcast. Or I did a podcast.
I don't know if I did
that. With Benioff and Weiss.
I feel like I must have. Was this like 2013?
Yeah. Did we not invite you?
Maybe I was busy.
You probably had travel baseball. You probably had a big... Yeah, that was the last press they did.
Okay.
Because of that. No, they from that point on, not because of our thing, but like after that year, they pretty much went James Hibbard EW exclusive.
Yes, right.
But they came on the podcast.
We got to get our James Hibbard EW exclusive creator. Who do you think that should be?
You don't think we have that already?
I think we have like a open line of communication with several people, but
yes.
I want someone to say, I will not do any other press except for The Watch.
Conrad and Mickey, your move.
Yeah, but like, I want those guys to blossom. Like, I want those guys to eat. I want those guys to like get well off of industry. You know, like, I don't want to hold them just for the two of us.
Okay, so here's my pitch. Three body problem, Dan and Dave. You know what one problem you won't have?
Make it right, guys.
The problem you won't have is good press when you talk to your pals here at the Watch Podcast.
Yeah.
Both Chris and I have read the novel in the original Chinese. We think that your vision for this property is bold.
It looks good.
It looks good.
It looks cool.
We could be proven so wrong here. This is me pivoting to genuine take here. But those guys are extremely talented. They've had all the time and all the resources to, I don't believe in the phrase get it right, but to give it their best and do their best version of it. So I think it's exciting. I also think it's a weird one, right? Where this has been the undercurrent of this entire podcast. But like, if this was for almost any other service, I think that the framing of like, this is a existentially important swing would matter, but it kind of doesn't for Netflix, right?
I mean, it is wild that this is just, this and Stranger Things will just be up on a Friday at midnight.
Yep.
And then the whole season will be there.
Do we have any sense of release date or anything? Are we?
Spring, I think. Spring, summer, something like that. Here's a couple more things, and then I have a funny little thing to talk to you about.
Okay. It's March. It's been given a date.
It's been given March.
21st okay, March.
A couple more things I have my eye on the FX Hulu side of things. I know that I talked about a couple of earlier, but I am very curious about Noah Hawley's Alien adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy Oliphant.
We're not sure if that's going to make this year.
I don't know. That was what he was shooting mm-hmm. when the strikes hit.
Yes. In Thailand.
Yes. Alex Lawther.
I love Alex
Lawther. And Timothy Oliphant, among others. And it's set decades before Alien, apparently.
Alex Lawther from End of the Fucking World and from Andor.
Yeah. The franchise, Armando Iannucci and Sam Mendes collaborating about a production of a superhero movie starring Billy Magnussen and Himesh Patel and Aya Cash.
Aya Cash was, we're like her James Hibbard.
Yeah, that's right.
She comes on this podcast a lot.
Yeah, that's good.
She's in the Five Timers Club.
Other Mr. and Mrs. Smith we've talked about. All right. You know what I didn't talk about? You noticed this?
No.
What's missing?
NCIS Sydney.
Marvel and Star Wars.
Oh, that's true.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
We, aside from Echo, don't really have a sense of what's coming Marvel-wise, especially live action. They've got a couple of animated things.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel mm-hmm. Zombies, like What If, X-Men 97. The heads are really chomping at the bit for that.
Mm-hmm.
We come out of Loki, we come out of the whole Jonathan Majors saga, and, you know, Deadpool is really the one. Deadpool is, like, the thing that seems to be coming, and I don't know. I wonder, we've long speculated and kind of wondered, like, could they do this, could they do that? It almost feels like they're laying the groundwork to mm-hmm. kind of reboot this whole thing a bit.
Yeah. I mean, so talk specifically just about the TV side or the whole MCU project?
I mean, the MCU project. And maybe its relationship to TV.
Yes.
Agatha Coven of Witches or Darkhold or whatever that they've decided to call it. But the Agatha show is apparently either shot or
Darkhold Diaries? Yeah. Didn't that used to air on Cinemax on Friday nights?
Yeah.
I feel like the real heads know. We didn't talk about this. Yeah, this happens. The Jonathan Majors verdict and then the Marvel...
The prompt... Reply from Disney, yeah.
Happened, I think, as we were leaving the studio for the last show we did in person last year. And I think the legal facts and the human element and Jonathan Majors and all of that, if we could bubble it off and set it aside for a moment, because there are real people involved in all of this, and just talk purely from through a professional and creative lens, I think it is fascinating because this is not an outcome anybody wanted. Certainly, again, for the personal cost of all of this. But I do wonder if internally they are thinking of this as an opportunity because it not only in one stroke, in one judge's decision, and again, I think many people have said this already, they were ready, they'd already pivoted. Yeah. This was already decided, they were letting the legal process play out. But all of a sudden, they have to pivot. And I think from a creative standpoint, not just us saying this, I think the box office was saying it as well, building the next half decade of your entertainment product off of one actor and one character that you have really only built up through your not particularly loved television arm, that's gone.
Yeah.
That's gone.
Yeah.
So there's a chance for them to try something new, which I think they otherwise, because of their commitment to the everything is connected bit, they would never have done.
Yeah. The multiversal aspect of the storytelling, I think at once has been one of the biggest drains on my interest mm-hmm. in Marvel, and is also the thing that provides them the out here, is that they can just be like, now we're going to tell a story that's taking place in another universe, or in another, not even another universe, yeah. but another timeline or whatever. And I wonder whether or not like market forces have contributed to a situation where they can like now say, let's focus on Fantastic Four and X-Men. You know, we don't need to make Ant-Man 4. We don't need to make Captain Marvel 3. We don't need to make a lot of this stuff.
I mean, they are still making Thunderbolts without the great Steven Yeun, mm-hmm. apparently, who had to drop out due to scheduling. But it's interesting. Like, there's a moment here where they could, to your point, they could say the next phase of the MCU is these unknown worlds. In this case, the unknown worlds being Fantastic Four
yeah.
and X-Men. And we don't have any prior knowledge, but it would make sense considering the larger arc of the
project. They could
also
totally reboot if they wanted to.
They could.
Yeah.
But I just mean that, like, building towards Secret Wars and all the Kang stuff suggests that they aren't going to say, hey, guess what? Professor Xavier School's been here the whole time, just south of Sokovia. We just didn't tell you about it. That they're going to say instead that there is a universe where the X-Men are a thing, and then yeah. they're going to crash them all together and make them one universe. So jumping to these other universes does give them a chance to kind of mirror what DC is doing and being like, it's a fresh start.
Yep.
But it is risky to walk away from not just your home story and your home planet, but your home universe. But at the same time, what's keeping the home fires burning that people are that interested in?
That's the thing. Is like, is there like a huge amount of people who are like, I got to get one more Doctor Strange in me, you know?
But we say this, and not only, I mean, Thunderbolts is presumably going to yeah. film soon, but Captain America is just, the new Captain America with Anthony Mackie is like perpetually filming, from what we understand, that they've just hired a new screenwriter, even though they've been filming
it's a never-ending
it for a few
story. It's a great American songbook. We just go back to it.
I think to before we go too out down that track to start the year, I think that your point at the start was an important one, which is...
You did want to do a tight 40 on Secret Wars.
I can't do a tight 40 on Secret... Maybe on Secret Wars 1, yeah. not Secret Wars 2. And let alone Hickman's Secret Wars. No, that it was interesting and very... I thought that was very exciting that you made this beautiful list with a lot of interesting programs, none of which are Marvel.
Yeah, and on the other side of the Mouse House...
Yeah.
At Lucasfilm. Mm-hmm. Obviously, sounds like Skeleton Crew is coming at some point this year, and that is John Watts' Jude Law starring Star Wars show that, at least in the descriptions of it, has Goonies, coming of age, Amblin vibes. And the directorial talent on this show, at least the mm-hmm. ones attached, is like the Daniels, Lee Isaac Chung. It's like, in addition to John Watts, that's incredible stuff. So that seems like it's coming.
Yes.
Acolyte.
I think so.
Your guess is as good as mine. Andor, like we said. And
I think Acolyte, which is Leslie Headland's show.
Yeah.
I think that'll come this year.
And then there's the Filoni-verse. The Filoni-Favreau side of things. And I don't know whether there's a Mando coming or whether there's a...
I assume, because now we've reached the end of your list, that you were saving my number one show for last, which is Monsieur Spade.
I mean, that's in a couple of weeks, bro.
January 14th.
Yep.
On AMC, we get Monsieur Spade, starring Clive Owen.
You're really putting a little bit of Dijon on Monsieur, aren't you?
The Dijon is actually what I coated my throat with before I gargled uh-huh. with Grey Poupon, just to be able to do the pod. This is the new show from Scott Frank.
Yeah.
We could be his James Hibbert. He's been on the show. Hopefully he'll come on again.
I think the New Yorker kind of elbowed us on that.
I kind of did want to say that. Like, Patrick Radden-Keefe did a profile of Scott Frank, the great screenwriter who also did Queen's Gambit and Godless. And if you like this podcast, you will like this article.
Yeah.
It is so sick. It is such a good profile. It's just like, these stories of like Scott Frank and Tony Gilroy.
But it's also like Patrick Radden-Keefe. Like, come on, dog. What are you doing?
One for him.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm just like you first you took out the IRA. Now you got to take out the watch.
Oh, like he came for us?
No, he didn't come for us. But it's just like we got bodied. There's no thing I can ask Scott Frank.
That's a good point. But there's one thing you could ask Daniel Ek, which is, can we have the budget to go to France?
Do you think it would be cool if we did an interview with Scott Frank and we were just like, my other favorite part of the Patrick Radden-Keefe profile of you?
My favorite part was just the anecdotes of Scott Frank and Tony Gilroy in exile in West Village cafes being like, ah, Bill Goldman told me to do this in Act One.
Yeah.
What a time.
I know.
So great. Doctors. These guys are great. I'm psyched
for
the show.
It.
You
that's
haven't watched
year.
It yet, right?
I have not fired those up yet. I was just thinking about doing it tonight, actually. Last night, I had to go see Night Swim, which I don't think you'll be seeing.
That's
a film starring Wyatt Russell about a haunted pool.
About a haunted swimming pool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would go 2.5 stars.
Really?
Yeah.
Pretty, do you think
pretty
that's
entertaining.
Do you think that's relevant to a lot of America? That seems pretty elitist.
No, he is a retired or forced to retire baseball player. So he has a little bit of money in the bank. So I think he can make a nice, healthy down payment.
No, I just mean like problems of the pool owning class.
Oh.
It feels like not since Cheever or whatever have we.
I don't know. I mean, mortgage rates are high. You're right.
They are.
Yeah.
I wish I had a pool.
Me too.
I would take a haunted pool at this point.
Would you trade your electric car for a swimming pool right now?
It wouldn't be responsible to the environment.
Neither of those things are, it seems like. That's our list for 2024. A ton of stuff will obviously just emerge. Mm-hmm. You always get your 000s. You always get, well, you know what? Hopefully we do get those kinds
of
things.
I don't know if we do anymore.
It's more and more rare. Kai, what is a thing that you were most excited about that I just listed?
Oh, let me see.
You're really putting her on the spot.
No,
here.
I just wanted to get her perspective.
I like the Kate Blanchett,
yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón show.
There you
that
go.
That sounds
It's adapted from a thriller.
That sounds great.
You know,
if it
can
exists.
You notice how much more Kaya reads this?
Oh, I've always known that.
Yeah.
One of the things I look forward to most.
Yeah,
in
but
the
you
year,
guys are reading like dense.
I told Kaya novels. That I was like, "Did you know that Anthony Jeselnik is like a huge voracious reader and is like actually like a very powerful recommendation engine unto himself?" I bought several books. Mm. She was like, "It's nice that you guys have that."
Well, because he said
she's like Oprah or Reese. Yeah,
yeah, and I was like, "I'm glad the guys."
Oh,
someone.
Oh, for the fellas, I was going to say every December, a prominent person drops a list of books that they've read over the previous year. And it's you. It's not Barack Obama.
Yeah.
The Kaya list. No, it's not you, Chris. It's the Kaya list. It's on Instagram.
I like to do a little influencing here.
Yeah,
there,
I
know?
Love it because also I really like the way you do it. You're like, here's the full total, but there's a check mark next to the ones you really like.
The star.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. And then I don't know if we don't have a grouped C on the IG, but I saw like The Guest by Emma Klein. I was interested in reading it. Kaya thinks that I would like it. So I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I recommend.
You know who else liked it?
Who?
Anthony Jeselnik.
Well,
Kaya, Anthony Jeselnik.
Do you know Anthony Jeselnik?
I've never heard of him before Chris pointed him out to me, but...
I'm glad. I think Chris makes fun of me when I say we should just make this a book podcast.
I'm all for that.
I'm all for it. I just think that you and I do... Mm-hmm. We have some divergent tastes when it comes to books. And also, it's just like, you know...
Oh, we did discover that over the break.
Yeah.
When you were reading your third thriller about an ex-IRA... whatever soldier who comes home to discover the bodies of missing children in his mom's garage or whatever. And I'm like, Rachel Cusk took her family to Italy. And she had some thoughts.
You seem like you're doing great. And I expect so much more from you on Monday.
Yeah, and I apologize for the vocal
that's all right.
Timbre here.
On behalf of the audience, it's all right. Some really fun stuff coming in the next couple of episodes. Like I mentioned, True Detective, Monsieur Spade, maybe a little...
See, now you're doing the other way. Munster Spade? What is this?
Monsieur Spade. Is that good?
Listen, it's not for me to judge.
Yeah, okay, Bill Buford. thanks for listening, and we will talk to you guys on Monday.